As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to this 2022 NFL offseason edition of the Football GM Podcast. Mike Sando here with Randy Mueller. And typically we record this for Saturdays, but with Robert Mays occupied today, he has called upon us to fill in. We're happy to do it. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Mike. I would thought Robert would have had guys higher on the list than us, but you know, I guess duty calls. So I'm happy to do it. I'm good. Always good to be back in the saddle with you, and hope everything's good in your world.
I had a lot of late round picks, you know, pay off. So hopefully we do well. And for those that haven't listened to us, because we are in a little bit of a different slot here, I am Mike Sando, senior writer for The Athletic. Been doing this a fair long time, 25 years covering the NFL. Randy Mueller, former NFL Exec of the Year, 35-year NFL evaluator, team builder, three-time GM, spent a lot of years with Seattle, Exec of the Year with the Saints, general manager of the Dolphins, and what, about a decade with the Chargers. So I probably left one or two out in there, but shoot, you did a stint at ESPN as well. So you've been around a little bit too.
I know where a few of the bones are buried, that's for sure.
It's funny, you know, one of the things we're going to talk about, a number of things, even though it's the middle of the off season and quote unquote the quiet period. We did get a nice contract for Terry McLaurin with Washington. I think that leads to some analysis and discussion, lends itself to that. Certainly it relates to DK Metcalf, who we want to talk about too, Seattle's young receiver who's in line for a deal, which I think is going to, I think the Seahawks are still an interesting topic overall. I think Randy still can't wrap his head around what they're doing at quarterback is kind of overall. So we're going to talk about them. Shoot, something with Deshaun Watson could pop while we're talking, while we're recording. We may get into that. I think Washington certainly is an interesting team overall, not just for McLaurin, where we're going to start, but they've had an eventful offseason with their owner, with their D coordinator, with their head coach. You name it. I think that's a team too. But Randy, before we get into that, I got to say, I enjoyed our round of golf together, not just because I hit the ball better than I do 99 out of 100 times. I don't know what happened. That was certainly not representative. But what did you think of our first shot in our foursome? What did you think of that?
Were you impressed with the group that I assembled? At some point, yeah.
Were you to set this up, you know, Randy and I both live in the Northwest, and he's got a place over in Idaho there. It's not that far of a drive for me. And so we're going to play some golf. And I said, hey, I'll invite a couple of my old buddies I used to work with there, and we'll have a great group. So we get to the first tee, and everyone's trying to make a good impression. And take it from there, Randy. What did you see?
Well, I'm trying to erase it from my mind, to be honest with you. These two buddies of Mike, I was looking forward to a great round of golf. I didn't know I was going to need psychological help and to be put on the couch for the next month and a half trying to get over what I saw on the first tee. But I'm afraid we'll offend somebody if we tell too many of the details. But the truth be known, the first swing of the day resulted in the death of a winged, you know, two-legged bird that I've never seen in my life before. And it shook us up. We were still talking about it hours later. It was crazy. Uneventful. Heck, that was the whole day.
Unbelievable. So we get to the first tee. There's history on this tee box, by the way. I used to play at this course, you know, when I lived over in that area. And so we've got some scars from this course. One time years ago, I tee off and I pull my drive and it goes through this guy's bay window, just shatters his window down there up the left side of the fairway at the dog leg, right? So I re-tee and I push it out over the trap on the right. So, you know, technically I didn't really have to go over where my ball went. My playing partner at the time pulls his drive into this guy's yard and just gets an earful over there. So we had that history. I actually hit my playing partner's son in the leg with a shot out of the rough on that hole. So we've got a lot of bones buried in this hole. The first hole, my buddy Steve, we'll just leave him at Steve. He tees off. He's a good golfer. He hits this screamer. It hits a freaking robin in the head by the ladies' tee box. And I trust that this poor creature, this innocent creature, died instantly. But there was like this spastic reaction where it cartwheeled off the course into the rough and then just lied there. And we all look at each other like, should we just quit? Should we just not? Is this a bad omen? Is something? We ended up having a great round, but Steve doesn't know this. I actually signed him up for a membership in the Audubon Society.
That's the least he can do. Come on.
Least he can do. We made a donation to the Audubon Society in honor of this poor creature. But And maybe
that was the start of the day.
That's the start of the day. Yeah. So we won't tell you what else happened on our round of golf. But it does lead into something that you have often said, Randy, that this time of the calendar, which is supposed to be relaxing with golf where you don't kill any creatures, is actually a little bit of a stressful time for the GM. Explain.
Well, I think it's been documented that a lot of the things that happen now, it's 90% bad. That's for sure. I mean, I remember being on a trip in Europe one time and getting a call when I was in Miami from one of our security people reporting that a player had been arrested down on South Beach, you know, time on their hands. A lot of times these guys want to get away. I totally understand it. But a lot of bad things can happen between now and training camp. So I know that whether it was Nick Saban or Mike Holmgren or whoever the people that I've been around as coaches, they would always, you know, the last day of school, it was like guys scattering, right? And so they always had to give the speech of, hey, this has got to be a little bit focus this next month. We can't have this kind of stuff happen. We all want you to get away, but it just seems like it's never ending. And we'll probably hear about something in the next week or so somewhere, some team, they're going to lose a player for some reason or another. And it's usually off the field instances that just, kids wanting to be kids. And I understand it, but it's a hard time when you've spent the whole offseason building your team and you think you're all set and then stuff happens. Yeah. So.
Yeah, stuff
it's a cautionary tale for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And I think you get 90 people on a roster and there's a good chance that something unexpected is going to happen with one of them, especially when you have free time in the schedule. I always laugh, you know, if I had had a lot of money when I was 22 years old and had 2 months off, I mean, you know, lots of things could have happened.
Yeah, it would have got us all, no doubt. Hey, I get it, but it's a hard deal now.
Now, not a hard deal for the Washington Commanders to re-sign Terry McLaurin, a very good young receiver, 26 years old. He gets, we don't have the final details and we're not going to make the mistake of saying exactly what it was worth, but we think he gets about $23 million a year on a three-year extension that's tacked on to the 2022 season. So now that's off the table. We're not going to have him missing training camp, those sorts of things. What do you think of him? What do you think of the deal? Anything notable here?
Well, I think the most notable thing probably is from 30,000 feet in that it was a positive for a franchise that has been taken on water for what seems like years in negative sense, you know? So We all know what's happened with the owner. We know what's happened with the congressional hearings and all this stuff. It just seems like it's a franchise that's somewhat cursed. So I do think it's a positive move for them. I've always liked Terry McCollin. I think he's a really good player. I think he's a complete player. I think he's the only thing lacking are really for me in his world are he's not really dynamic as a speed receiver like a Tyreek Hill or even like a A.J. Brown or some of those guys, Stephon Diggs. He's probably got slotted salary-wise below those guys, and I think that's probably fair. The other thing is it's been hard for him is he's been productive in a world of revolving quarterbacks, an offensive system that I'm not sold on. So I think for him to come out of this with a three-year extension in the low 20s is probably a good deal for everybody involved, to be honest with you. So I like the deal. I think it's good for the Washington side. I think it's good for Terry himself. I do think it leads into some of the receivers and the money they got in this offseason, and that's a changing landscape. And you know, you hate to say $23 million a year kind of comes back down to earth, but I can understand this one. Some I really don't understand. It's still a lot of money, but I think it's a good deal for everybody involved, really. And it kind of, like I said, fits from an ability standpoint and from a business standpoint in the right spot for all parties.
It is amazing. I'm now conditioned to, they had $23 million. I don't even blink. And that used yeah, to, that would have been a quarterback starting salary, you know, And it's really amazing the growth of the league and what's going to come. It's going to only go up. But you're right. To $23 million, if that's what it is, would put him, I think, you know, maybe about seventh. And we'll see what it actually comes in. But you'd have Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, Cooper Kupp, A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs in that range. I got no problem with it. Really like him as a player. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to re-sign your best players. I think it's great for your locker room. All of that stuff. And so a good deal there. Let's talk about the implications for it just more broadly for the league, because I think DK Metcalf is an interesting one now, and he has generally showed up for everything but then didn't come to the latest camp for the CX, which I don't think is a huge deal, but just a little, maybe just sending a signal that, hey guys, you know, that we need to get this done. I think it will get done most likely in training camp. What do you think of him? Where would you slot him in? Would you want to bring him in below McLaurin, above?
Well, and again, everybody's going to have their own opinion on this, but as an evaluator and as a guy that's looked at him closely on film, I would definitely say that the McCollin-Karin deal is the ceiling, and I think he probably should follow suit under this. I don't think he's as complete as the guys you mentioned, whether it's Diggs or A.J. Brown or Cooper Kupp or even Davante Adams and definitely Tyreek Hill. I don't think he's in that category. I think he's a little more flashy, so everybody has their opinion of this big play guy, and he scored a share of touchdowns. I understand that. But I don't think he's as complete a receiver. I don't think he's the route runner that we see some of these other guys are. So I think he's still a work in progress. It's going to be interesting. I'm sure he wants to get his money for a lot of reasons, but you mentioned their quarterback issues and the things that their offense has struggled with. I'm sure he wants to get paid before the results of that come out on the field this year, because I think that could be a struggle for him to keep up numbers-wise. So it's definitely going to have a reflection. I've said all along that these deals that these receivers are getting are really a philosophical decision that front offices have to make, even more so than the individuals and what they're worth and how they are valued, I think. Because there's certain systems, there's certain offensive coaches, there's certain play callers that just aren't comfortable paying top dollar. And now top dollar is, you know, $23 million plus for a receiver. Like you said, for a non-quarterback, for a guy that has to be, you know, schemed in. These coaches that I'm referring to, the Andy Reids, the guy in Green Bay, the guys that got rid of these receivers, they're banking on their systems and their quarterbacks, and that's how they're, you know, that's how they've decided to spend their money. So I don't know that that's going to be running rampant throughout the league. All of a sudden, every receiver now is going to get the next $25 million deal, a year deal. I just don't see that as being the norm as much as the normal fan might, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I think it's just different by team, too. I mean, I think that Kansas City would have an easier time doing it if they weren't paying their quarterback so much, or if they didn't feel like their coach and quarterback were so good that they can put someone else in there. I mean, look at Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers, with Aaron Rodgers there, they can make Jeff Janis look like a good player. You know, look like have good numbers, or they can have different receivers in there. We can debate whether they should have better guys, but the quarterback component, what he's making, is a huge part of it. I'm Seattle. Who else am I going to pay, right? I mean, it's not like they have a quarterback that they have to pay. And I am interested, though, in your eval on the player, because I think we've talked about this a lot in terms of what you like, and you definitely like the more well-rounded guy. We joke that you don't just like all the Ohio State guys, wink, wink, because you drafted Ted Ginn and Joey Galloway. You had Chris Olave, number one. I think you had the other Ohio State receiver, maybe number two in this draft. This year, and of course McLaurin's an Ohio State guy, but why do you like for me instinctively, I would see a DK Metcalf, and maybe I just look at those two guys and say, I want this guy. You know, I remember watching Terrell Owens in warmups, and you go, God, who's that guy? Mm-hmm. Can we have guys that look like that on our team? Mm-hmm. And when I look at the production of Metcalf, shoot, he's never missed a game, mm-hmm. Which McLaurin hasn't missed many either, but he's got more yards than McLaurin over the last 3 years. We can say it's the quarterback. He's caught a lot more touchdown passes. We can say it's the quarterback. He seems to be a great competitor. When we've seen him not only just get upset at times, but chase down the guy in Arizona. I mean, I just don't see why. I think I would rather lean towards a Metcalf and bet on that physical impressiveness and maybe being able to grow into that at age 24, 2 years younger, than I would McLaurin. Why would you rather have McLaurin, and what do you not see in Metcalf for his future?
I think more than anything, the development of these guys once they get in the league will, you know, that sticks with me. I think McLaurin has developed maybe more than Metcalf has. I think Metcalf has more upside, without a doubt. And I understand these are varying opinions, and I'm not saying, hey, I'm right. I'm just, for my money, and you mentioned something earlier that just, you know, that make me think about something. Who else are they going to pay? A team would never think about that as being a reason to pay somebody, just because who else are we going to pay? They're looking at it more in a detailed fashion. I would hope so. And I don't know. I guess I just don't see the details in Metcalf's game compared to a McLaurin. I think he's big. Yes, he can run fast. Yes, but I don't see the full route tree that a McLaurin has. I don't think he could be used in the same way because of that. I just don't see the completeness. But I do see what you're saying. Big plays, you know, catches a lot of long balls, has a chance to score when he does catch it. I just see the not quite the versatility that a McLaurin might have. So, again, it comes down to everybody likes a different flavor of ice cream. And I like the more complete guys, the guy that we can do all kinds of stuff with, that our coaches can scheme in any way. I just think sometimes, and again, I'm not killing Metcalf. I understand he's a good player, but he's just not as versatile and not as complete for me as McLaurin. That's all.
Who do you think a defensive coordinator would rather face? Is that gonna change based on who the coordinator is, or do you think that, kind of to my point, that you know, Metcalf could be the more imposing matchup? Is he a bigger game plan consideration, or no?
I think anytime speed, I think anytime speed's a factor, that scares defenses. So if you're saying that Metcalf is faster and more big playability, that may scare him. More, and they've got to be aware of where he's at. I always used to say, hey, when whether it was Ted Ginn or Joey Galloway or whoever we had as a fast guy, I said, he changes the way they defend us, even if we never throw him the ball, because they're going to know that he can take the top off the defense. Now, if we're saying Metcalf can do some of that, and we've seen evidence of that, I think you're probably right, and I think it's a valid point. That might put more fear into defenses. But if I'm investing for the future, it comes with, hey, would I rather invest in a flashy stock, or would I rather invest in, you know, AT&T over the long haul? You know,
reliable
something
stock.
Like
that.
Yeah. So.
And what's interesting too is, so if we look at these two players, it's amazing they've both run 1,600 routes and change. Okay, so they've been targeted. One of them's been targeted 358 times. The other 357. So we have a real There's right. They've played about the same. Here's what's interesting. So Metcalf has a lot more drops, 22 mm-hmm. to 12. Okay, so there's a little bit of that consistency you're talking about. They both average exactly the same number of yards per route run. They have almost the exact same number of explosive receptions. How about this? Receptions mm-hmm. gaining more than 15 yards, Metcalf 69, McLaurin 68. That wouldn't be my perception. Mm-hmm. Because I would perceive the, you know, the upside or whatever we're talking about, and especially with Russell Wilson being a deep ball thrower, mm-hmm. you would say that. But shoot, here's McLaurin, got the same number of big plays, a little bit of a higher, you know, a little bit of a higher yards per catch for Metcalf, but that could be because some of those underneath and shorter things that you want a receiver to do, he's not as good at. Now, I would say right. this. I don't think Russell Wilson throws a lot of those either. So I think they've been a more of a downfield offense. I don't think, when we're going to get into this with Seattle, that they necessarily have the quarterbacks to maximize any receiver, whether it was McLaurin or Metcalf. But I think at age 24, with the production that Metcalf's had, with the fact that he stayed on the field, and the fact that maybe he can grow into be more, that has a lot of appeal to me, and I wouldn't have a problem paying him even a little bit more than McLaurin got, if that's what it took. I do have in the back of my mind, Randy, you said you would never take into account who else do we have to pay, and I think that is a flippant way of putting it. I wouldn't say that, but I think it's easier to assimilate a contract for somebody like Metcalf when you don't have a bunch of other guys yet to pay. It's going to be a relatively young team. We're kind of going back in time for Seattle here. And if they are a million higher on Metcalf than they'd like to be, I don't think it really matters.
Right. I would agree with that. I think for them, for Seattle, Metcalf probably makes more sense. And they know what they have. A lot of times it's in the eyes of the beholder, right? Hopefully these teams value their own guys more than making a change. So you might be willing to pay another million or two over the top just to keep your group intact. So I think there's value to be gained as well. I think in both these cases, and let's just assume Metcalf does get done, it'll be a fascinating follow for the next 2 or 3 years, whether the quarterback and the offense can raise the production bar with either one of these and how it does change them going forward, if at all. Because I do think there is more in Metcalf's tank if they can somehow develop him just to do a little more of the little detail things that McLaurin does. So different types, different styles. Yeah. As you pointed out, maybe the numbers are more, you know, parallel than we think, but they go yep. about it totally different.
They do go about it differently. Now, I think for Metcalf, like what you said, he should take a deal now and strike after three mm-hmm. really good years before a bad quarterback situation could.
Yep, that's my
could
point.
Could affect him yeah. after a bad year. And if I'm Seattle, I may be thinking that way too, because mm-hmm. You may buy not only a good young player that you hope you can maximize once the quarterback situation is hopefully more solid, but you may have an easier time managing him this coming year and the frustrations, the ups and downs of the season if he's already been paid, as opposed yeah. to he feels this whole thing slipping away now and he's gone five games without a touchdown and people are starting to talk about how his production's down and then he's worried about his long-term value. You may just buy a happier situation by getting it done now.
And there's some value to that, Mike. That's a valid yeah. point. I think teams realize each individual player they have are different personalities. They're different in dealing yep. with the business side. They can handle some bad news with good news. And I'm not saying DK can't, but you're right in that I think a happier paid DK might give them a better chance to manage the situation going forward, because I think there's some rough waters ahead here at some point, and you'd like to have at least as many good pieces going forward tied down as you can so that they can't jump off the ship, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but I do feel like the vitals on him are good. Like, he's going to work hard. I think he's a
yeah,
good teammate.
He means well.
I think
yes.
he means well, all of that. It's yeah. just that overall frustration that you could sense that he could have if,
yep.
you know.
Well, he's shown it in the past.
And he's shown yeah. it in the past. So, yeah. Yet I think... Yeah, so you could manage that. I'm not worried about the underlying stuff. You know, I don't think it's a big problem of a reason why I wouldn't like him or anything. It just could make the situation a little bit tougher. Let's talk about that situation, Randy, because I think you still can't believe that it's Drew Lock and Geno Smith for the Seahawks, and a lot of people can't. I mean, that's yeah. I think that's why a lot of this Baker Mayfield stuff's coming up. I don't think it's because Seattle's interested in him. I really actually don't think they are that interested. Mm-hmm. And I think – from the outside, Seattle's been a hard team to read because the way, because let's face it, people on the outside can't believe that they'll do some of the things that they'll do, that they're really thinking that way. I think they are going into the season with these two guys. What do you think of it? What do you think of where they're at? And just, can you believe it?
Well, there's a couple things. One thing is that I keep reading and hearing, and I don't know if this is true. I have not talked to the people on the inside. I'm sure you're better connected there than I am. But I've read the narrative that John Schneider had liked Drew Locke coming out of Missouri. Well, here's the deal. There's three more years of film, but since then, that would have a lot to do with my perspective on if I liked a player that coming out of college or not. So there is some more information. So the fact that I like somebody coming out of college, and I'm anchored on that position, would scare me a little bit. The other thing is, it's not like Seattle has been great picking quarterbacks. And let's just face it, they got Russell Wilson. I get it. They had him for a decade and even longer. But before that, they were paying the Matt Flynn's of the world and Charlie Whitehurst's of the world. Yeah. And they were swinging and missing on quarterbacks. So it's not like they're the quarterback factory, right? So I just have that doubt in the back of my mind that, gosh, are they going to get this right? Obviously, Vegas doesn't see it that way. The over and under is 5.5. So there's questions there. Not that Vegas knows everything, but Vegas knows some things. They always do. That's why there are glitter and everything else in that town. So I think there is some doubt, and there is for me going forward. I have tried to warm up to Drew Locke. I've tried to understand their thinking. I've tried to drink the Kool-Aid because, as you said, we live in the Northwest. So I don't see it. I'm not seeing it. I saw some fatal flaws. I saw it cost a staff in Denver their jobs. They signed Teddy Bridgewater to replace him, and Teddy Bridgewater is just a guy, you know, in the NFL right now. So I don't know where they're going to get it. I don't think Geno Smith is the answer. I've also heard the narrative, and I can't remember who exactly said they're going to be okay if they win 6 or 7 games because next year's quarterback crop is better. Well, that's a whole nother podcast if we're going to get into next year's quarterback group, because as you know, this time last year, we're talking about the Spencer Rattlers and Sam Howells and all those guys that everybody, all the experts had locked into being top 10 franchise quarterbacks. And none of those guys got picked in the top 5 rounds, much less anything else. So that's not a given that next year's quarterback crew is going to be great and that we should wait to fill our need a year from now.
Your points about Russell Wilson being the one they hit on compared to the 5 or 6 or however many others that they totally missed on is a great point. And it's a little bit how it is at quarterback, right? I mean, you try and you try and you try. But there have been other situations over time. That their coach before Pete Carroll was Mike Holmgren. And they drafted guys all the time in Green Bay, and they ended up being good players. They had a track record of drafting and developing quarterbacks that you could hang your hat on and say, you know what?
Right.
He could bring in a Matt Hasselbeck and go to 3 Pro Bowls, right? They can draft a Ty Detmer or a Mark Brunell, or they can have a Kurt Warner in camp because they know exactly
and cut him and be okay with it. Yeah,
they know what they're looking at that position, and they have an amazing track record. I do agree with the risk that you have, and I think that this is a unprecedented situation. I just can't think of another time that you have a quarterback who's perceived to be at least a top 10 quarterback, who's under contract, who is not especially old, is not especially broken down, and you trade him away without having something that looks better or a viable alternative. I mean, I think when the Colts got rid of Peyton Manning, they had Andrew Luck. You could understand why they were doing it. This is a situation that I really can't find a precedent for. To me, the variables that I look at that are key are, is Wilson in decline and are they selling high? I think he could be. I think we may have seen the best of him, actually.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think it's an indicator of how sour that relationship was and how the shelf life had expired, without a doubt. And we see that every day. And I've said from the first minute this happened, there's got to be something else coming. There's got to be something else coming. And there hasn't been. So that's where my skepticism comes from. I had already made up my mind in everything that I saw in 2 or 3 years of Drew Locke in Denver. And I thought Geno is Geno, you know. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to follow. And as you mentioned, the Baker deal isn't settled yet. That's a whole nother topic of, you know, we heard leaked out information over the last couple weeks that Carolina was close to making a deal. Then a week later, we heard Seattle's close to making a deal. Well, guess what? That's all coming from Cleveland, right? They're trying to stir up interest so that they can scare somebody into making a deal, and it hasn't happened yet. So
he doesn't fit in Seattle, though, does he, Randy? I mean, everyone I know that even likes Baker Mayfield is like, this guy needs to be in a shotgun, up-tempo offense and move fast. That's not what Seattle wants to do. Do you think it would be a good fit or just a marginal upgrade over Drew Lock, and then you're looking for a guy in a year anyway?
I don't really know what Seattle's offense is. I'll be honest with you. I don't see it enough. I thought it struggled last year. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for something to really say this is our identity. This is what we do. I happen to be one of the few that think Baker on a one-year deal makes a lot of sense in Seattle. But obviously, I'm the only one that thinks that.
No, a lot of people think that. A lot of people. I think that's what the public perception is. Hey, we just get Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, and I don't think he's the answer, but I think he's on a one-year deal. He has to play well. I think he could execute what they did last year as good, if not better, than the people who were doing it last year. I think he's an upgrade as a passer and a decision maker over Drew Lock or Geno. So I do think he's a better option for me. Obviously, they don't think that. Now, the other side is, are they just waiting it out to where Cleveland has to cut him? That's a whole nother topic of how the exit path either has hurdles or the hurdles get pushed down and he becomes free. I don't know. But it's still Seattle. It's still Carolina. We're 4 months removed from the first time we heard these guys in this conversation. I happen to think that Carolina is not a good fit for him. And I know Baker's agents well, and they're very competent people. They're good people. They understand it too. But I think Carolina is a hornet's nest because I think the coach is under the gun. I think everybody there is under the gun. They've got an owner that, you know, is ready to press the button any day now on a reset, I think. And if I'm Baker, that could be messy and ugly in the same.
I agree.
I don't think that makes any sense to me.
I'd rather have a year as a backup somewhere or a year off than go to Carolina. I think it's a terrible place.
And maybe that's why I keep coming back to Seattle as being the one spot for him, you know?
Yeah, and I think if the terms were right on it, it makes sense.
What are the terms for? He's going to get his $19 million.
Yeah, I know, exactly. But Seattle needs him humbled in that role, not empowered in that role. Do you agree?
I agree with that, but I think they would get a humbled Baker. I just think it's a matter of, I guess when you say terms, who pays what portion of the $19 million? Oh, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying, no. To me, if I'm Seattle, I don't want to pay any of it. I just sign him for a few million bucks.
That's fine. Then you got to wait it out, and that may happen. That may happen. I would do that
before I'd trade for him.
I think the narrative of Baker, why don't the Browns just welcome him back now? Because Watson's going to be, that to me is ridiculous. It's crazy. There's no way.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah.
Again, I don't know if we want to get into this now, but the Browns have kind of overplayed their hand in my mind anyway. So we'll see what happens. But I know this for sure. Baker's getting his $19 million. It's just a matter of who writes the check. That's all. So I know this, having negotiated hundreds of deals, I would rather negotiate from zero up than $19 million down.
Yeah.
And that may be part of the parameters and the issues here. I think at some point, Cleveland has to pull the trigger on moving on. And I think from a team building standpoint, from a locker room standpoint, from a continuity standpoint, that's coming pretty soon. At some point, the distraction is going to be real, whether it's with the Watson fallout or moving on from Baker. And I know I would want, as the GM, as Andrew Berry, I would want that distraction to be over and have some time passed so that we can come to training camp with a clear mind and clear direction as to what we're going to do. I don't want all this doubt and rumor swirling and all that. So that's fast approaching, in my opinion.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts,
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, Randy, with this whole, we're talking about Cleveland, we're talking about Seattle, and I think in a normal offseason, the situation in Seattle would be a once in a 10-year, it would be the most spectacular thing we've seen happen at the quarterback position, like I was talking about, where you have a franchise icon who is just traded, and you don't even have a viable quarterback. You don't have a backup plan. That is unprecedented enough, but maybe five times more unprecedented than that, like unprecedented in the history of the league, is this Deshaun Watson situation, where the team went all in for him, paid him. He's got all these lawsuits against him, and we don't know what the heck's going to happen. And beyond that, normally we have at least Roger Goodell's in charge of discipline. Here's what the commissioner's done in the past. Here's what I think he'll do and why. We don't even know that. We have an arbitrator in Susan Robinson who no one knows anything about. So when we say we can't believe what Seattle's doing at quarterback, really you can't believe times five what Cleveland's doing and where it might even go.
You're exactly right. I think it's more than the story of the year. I think you're on it. It's the story of the last 5 or 6 years. I think the enormity of it, the decisions that have been made up to this point are borderline reckless. It's only worse. It only gets worse because we still don't know months after the fact. I'd like to say it's a foregone conclusion that Deshaun Watson isn't playing football this year, but we don't know that. We don't know Susan Robinson. She's never been in a role like this. Do you think the league or Roger Goodell is regretful of giving up the gavel when it comes to discipline at this point for this one case because it has such an enormous effect on the league? I think yes. They'd have to, right?
Yeah, they would have to unless they know that they're going to get what they want anyway. I don't know.
But how do they know that? We've never been down this road. Isn't the point of Susan Robinson being involved? She's supposed to be an independent arbitrator of all things personal conduct?
I think it does take Goodell off the hook a little bit personally, though, because they can say that they've pushed for doing what's right, okay? Which I think the public perceives as Deshaun Watson not playing this year, maybe even not playing some of next season.
Yeah, and that was leaked out for a reason. I agree.
Absolutely. So I think the league sort of politically here needs to appear to really want to come down hard on Deshaun Watson. Can the league have it both ways in this thing? The league, we want to do what's right. We want this guy out. And then he's playing for Cleveland Browns sooner than they want, and it's not their fault. I mean, that's a kind of a cynical way of looking at it.
Well, yeah.
but Goodell can't really be held responsible now, right, for whatever it is.
Not directly, but I do know this that makes it even more, puts even more at stake, is there are 31 owners and 31 front offices with their eyes directly beaming on this to find out what's going on. All
and they
these
want
owners
Watson punished, right?
They yes, want they punished. They want their pound of flesh extracted. There's no doubt about it. This has been a deal changer for them in every way. On every street corner, they've heard about it. They all think that the Browns pulled wool over their eyes in this case, and they're all having to pay the price. So I do think that is part of it. Whether it's part of Susan Robinson's, decree, I doubt. But that's why that's so fascinating, because there is so much at stake with regard to this. And I think you're right. The league leaked out this information so that everybody knew that they clearly wanted to. And you and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we were playing golf that day, in that I thought there would be a year suspension or a year, come back after a year, and then we'll talk about it. Because I think there's even more at stake than this season. I think there's some of 2023. Oh, yeah. Where financially they can get into everybody's pocket even more. We all know that his base salary for this year is $1 million, and it goes up extremely higher in 23. So they're good. They want some of that money as well. So the league has made their case publicly now, and I think you're right, to take the pressure off Goodell, to take the pressure off, you know, and put it squarely on the arbitrator's, you know, plate per se.
Absolutely. The best thing for the league would be to just exempt list them this year and then start the suspension after that. Sort of, and you could do it under the guise, not just the guise, but the real reality of these things aren't settled.
And they're not settled, and who knows what's coming.
Who knows what's coming, and you have to give that. You can't wait forever for what else might be coming, but I think you could certainly wait, wait this season, and then, you know, do that, and we'll see how that goes with the arbitrator. We've also seen out there this idea that, hey, the league didn't come down hard on Robert Kraft and Daniel Snyder for what they did. So, look, personal conduct policy, Randy, applies to everybody. Do you think that is a decent basis of an argument, sort of put you in Susan Robinson's shoes, for maybe not coming down as hard on Deshaun Watson? Or is that fantasy land thinking by people who are just grasping for anything as Deshaun Watson, you know, basically is going to take his punishment?
Yeah, I think that's probably fodder for the Watson camp and for what they would like to introduce as part of the reason for a lesser sentencing per se. I also think that they'll use the inconsistencies in the past of the personal conduct, court of law, if that we can even use that as, because we know it's not a court of law, it's all done internally, but they're going to use the inconsistencies in the past, whether Roger used them or any of his lieutenants used them in deciding cases. There's just nothing been to this level and been this convoluted, in my opinion. So I don't think any of that will matter. I'm not buying part of that as part of this case. I also think that Susan Robinson has to put her stamp on something. And I just, you know, I don't know. I just don't know her. So
what we've seen in the past, I think, is people that are on the inside of the league sometimes don't realize how big these things are on the outside, right? And we've seen shoot Goodell with the Ray Rice situation or whatever, right? I mean, the way that things have been looked at from inside the league haven't always been in the appropriate proportion, right, to what because I think inside the league, everything's focused on how well somebody plays and next week's game and all of that. This obviously touches on much bigger societal issues. So my hope would be that somebody who's not, doesn't come from inside the league, isn't sort of hardened by that inside the league thinking, might look at this from the outside and say, wow, you know, see it for what it is. I'm not saying that I hope that she comes down overly hard, because I don't think that would be right either. But I hope that an outside perspective is actually appropriate here for what's going on, because this is unprecedented. Maybe they'll benefit from having someone looking at this from a different angle.
Yeah.
What you said, though, is interesting. Like, she has to put her stamp on this thing, too, because this is going to define her. Whatever she does here defines her in this role. Mm-hmm. That could be good, because maybe then she feels like, I need to do what's appropriate here, whatever that is, and come out with something that's fair.
Well, it's hard to find cases to compare it to or history. But if you go back just to the Ben Roethlisberger deal, and that was, 8 or 10 years ago when that happened, he was suspended 6 games for one violation of the equal to the 24 that Deshaun Watson has. And he was suspended, I believe, 6 games, and it got reduced to 4. Was that right?
Yeah, it was something like that. Hold on.
Yeah, 6 that went to 4 for one. So if you use that and extrapolate that out to where there's 24 of these cases, it's easy to justify, hey, this should be a year and a half, to be honest with you. So everybody's going to cherry pick history to help their cause. That's the world, right? That's the way the world operates now. So I'm just going to be fascinated by where she comes down on this with all the different points of view and angles and agendas at stake. Frankly, I'm happy there's an independent person doing it, and maybe she will be less agenda affected, you know?
Absolutely. It was 4 games that Roethlisberger ended up being suspended back then. Yeah. So it seems like it has to be way more than that. Just the gravity of this whole thing feels so different. And I think no one's going to be satisfied other than Watson's camp if it's not if he plays this year, even. I think it's got to be longer than that. So
it'll be interesting to see what the Cleveland Browns come out, you know, at the end of all this, with egg on their face or not. Just saying, they had to know some of this stuff was coming. Yeah. They had to. These guys are smart people. They had to know a little bit about what they were going to face.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
So here's a parallel that segues into, I think, how we want to wrap this up, which is circling back to the Washington Commanders. I think these are two franchises, okay, that have bad owners. We'd say Cleveland and Washington have terrible owners. But in both cases, they've tried to hire good people who have good reputations in the league to kind of right the ship. The owners themselves haven't changed, but certainly in the case of Cleveland, you know, they initially brought in John Dorsey, you know, and he upgraded some of the talent of the team. And then they brought in, you know, they have Andrew Berry, and they have Kevin Stefanski, who I think are well-regarded people in the league. And they're kind of seen as sort of smart, stable people, right? They're sort of seen as the opposite of that owner in terms of temperament and just terms of the way they go about things. And then the same thing here in Washington, where you have Dan Snyder, who has a terrible reputation that's only gotten worse. But you've brought in Ron Rivera, right? Somebody who I think is well regarded around the league, and he's going to try to make this situation better. Or they've tried to change the culture of the team, right? They brought in Jason Wright also as a team president, and that's been the messaging: is that hey, we've made these changes. Can you really? I guess my question here, maybe we have our answer. Can you really do that and succeed, or does a bad owner always sort of win in the wrong ways and drag you down?
Well, that's a good point. It's really a great question. I think dysfunction always starts at the top. I think you can bring people in, but what's happened, I think, especially in the Washington case, I've worked with Ron Rivera. I know him well. The further he gets away from coaching the team, the more that team is going to struggle. And I feel like once he got there, they've given him all these hats, or he's wanted all these hats.
GM one of the two. For a year, yeah. You know, all that.
He's everything. He's still running that part of it. So I know the Jason Wright hire was a good hire. I know he's a sharp guy and should be able to help. But I just see Ron with his hat changing every day and getting further and further away from the team. He's got friends and family that work under him now, and that theory always for me doesn't work, you know. So there's some things there that I still can have concern. I understand the culture is better. I know Ron's a good person, but they haven't shown it on the field, let's face it. And now they have more distractions above him than maybe ever before with all the stuff the Commanders, you know, are trying to put to bed from years past. So it's just a cesspool of swirls around and around. And we've saw the Jimmy Haslam stuff in Cleveland. You mentioned the long litany of GMs, and you've left out a couple in that group too.
Sashi so they've Brown tried in there. Yeah. Other guys.
I think, all these people are good people, but they've all had to jump outside of their own lanes. And that's really when you get in trouble, when you get outside your own lane. I think, Team building is hard. Team building is a really hard task. Some people are better at it than others, but it definitely helps when you have an owner at the top that gets it. And I'm not sure in this case we do, you know, so I don't know. I wish I had a better crystal ball for these franchises, but they've been the same for years now, so I don't know.
Yeah, and I just that's what I felt like with the Deshaun Watson thing happening when that happened sort of out of left field and they were involved. Obviously, the owner has to not only sign off on it, but it just felt like an owner grabbing control of the wheel, you know, when the car was sort of back on the road and it was between the lines. And then all of a sudden, that felt like, and I'm not excusing the football people there because maybe they really wanted to get Deshaun Watson too. But I think a better ownership would have resulted in handling that situation better, maybe not even going after him, certainly not giving him that kind of contract once you were in. And I think we're seeing it here with Washington too, that if you don't have that ownership at the top being solid, especially if it's really dysfunctional, I don't know that you can bring in enough good people underneath that and be able to steer it. And your point about Ron Rivera maybe, you know, having to do too many things besides coach the team is a great one. I just look at what they've had to deal with this offseason. Besides the Daniel Snyder thing, you got Jack Del Rio, you know, being a political commentator. And then how about this? Their head coach and their D coordinator, Jack Del Rio, have both been fined $100,000 this offseason. Yeah. I mean, what's up with that?
Rivera, I thought it was interesting. It initially came out that Ron Rivera was fining Del Rio $100,000. Then they kind of reworded that to the club is fining him $100,000. Then Ron Rivera gets fired $100,000 for violations of OTAs and too much physical contact. So wait a second. It's like, it's crazy. You're right. I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, maybe if Rivera could have fined Jack Del Rio, he could have used that $100,000 himself to pay the league.
to pay his own fine.
Thanks, Jack. But
at some point,
at some point, hopefully you don't have those things going on. And oh, by the way, Washington has now brought in Carson Wentz at quarterback. Talk about stability. I mean,
another
circus, because he can't handle it. And you know, he may be an upgrade. He may play well, but he's certainly, if you were to talk about leadership, Ron Rivera is going to help him lead the team too.
Yeah,
because he's not a natural leader and doesn't really have a great self-awareness and know how to do it. So,
and that's a team that has a record of swinging and missing at quarterbacks, I think, for the last several years. So they've kind of, in my opinion, misevaluated their quarterback position now for 2 or 3 years. So time will tell. Yeah. The other franchise you can throw in there really sometimes is Miami. And that starts with the ownership too, because of the chaos they've had. And you can go back to why do things keep coming up at Miami about Tom Brady and their pursuit of Watson last year when they didn't pursue him? Then the coach leaving under all this
suing auspice him.
I mean, same thing. Stuff keeps happening there. And maybe Mr. Ross is the greatest guy in the world, and maybe it's the people under him. But I know it's not the football people there, because I know those guys. And they're not off the hook trying to do all these other things. So there's a distraction sometime that is created at the top that nobody in the building can do anything about it.
So I guess I would say this. If you have the great quarterback and a good coach, I think that overcomes anything. And so let's just look at Tom Brady going to Tampa. That's another team that hasn't had great ownership, right? You would say Tampa's ownership is better than those other ownerships, but we wouldn't have been holding that up as an example of great ownership.
Yeah.
And then you bring in Brady and you have Bruce Arians and now, you know, Todd Bowles. I think that overcomes, right?
You can overcome it. No doubt. Yep.
That overcomes, but maybe if you have bad ownership, getting a good coach or just some stability in the front office isn't going to be enough by itself.
It depends. I'll tell you, you've seen some cases. For example, look at New Orleans, what they've done. And I don't think Tom Benson was ever regarded as the greatest owner ever, but he was always had a reputation of being a little tight and a little bit of a questionable decision maker. But guess what? You got Drew Brees, you got Sean Payton, and you win a Super Bowl. So it can be overcome.
Yep.
But I don't know that at some point, I think we all have to figure out what we are and what we're good at, whether it's the owner, whether it's the coach, whether it's the GM. And once we find the lane that we're comfortable and good in, we ought to just stay there, and hopefully the owner understands that as well, what they are good at. Bill Polian used to say this for years, and I used to laugh every time he'd say it. He said, owners own, coaches coach, GMs GM. He said, those are the best organizations. Players play. He said, it's when the lines get blurred, that's when you have a problem, when everybody wants to get in everybody else's business. So
yep, it's fascinating.
Probably some merit to that.
It's absolutely fascinating and how all these teams come together or not, and what's going to happen. So I think we've used our time here, Randy. Hopefully we've used it wisely and people have enjoyed the conversation. Everybody here, you can find Randy Mueller on Twitter at @RandyMueller_. You can also go to MuellerFootball.com. Lots of good stuff on there. I'm Mike Sando. You can find me at SandoNFL, also on The Athletic. Thanks for coming along, and Randy, we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good, Mike.
This was The Athletic Football Show.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.